Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein, and this week we have a very interesting contemporary, both a halacha and a hashkafa discussion. We're going to have a debate with Satma, the Eidach Redis, the supporters of Rav Shmuel Bach, perhaps some brisk as well, you know, it's perhaps the brisk sheet as well. And I call it a debate, but we tag along with a debate, but it's not really a debate. I think it's more of a discussion. We see the marches at Barclays Stadium, boys laying down in the street, stopping traffic. We see the, you know, the antithesis, the antipathy, the dislike of the Zionist quote unquote state, and many people don't understand either the halacha or the hashkaf of it. So the people who are clearly proponents of it, such as we'll begin with Satmar, because Satmar is, we would say, agreed that the Divrei Yoel, that he wrote the Alagula Valatzmur, the late Satmar Rebbe, clearly was the leading, you know, archetype of this Shita. And we know many Satmar, and we say, you know, they're makbir on mitzvahs, shmiris ha-mitzvahs, and so these are clearly anashim who are sincere, yireim, shleimim. So rather than just say, you know, not understand it, let's make a deep dive into understanding what do they really believe. So we have, we will have for the side of Rav Steinman, which is really the more classic in Israel, I would say, you know, the vast majority of the Haredim would, you know, follow his path. We will have Rabbi Yeshua Eichenstein, who's against the protests, against protesting, against making, you know, these marches, stopping traffic, etc. He's a confidant. He's a right-hand man of Rabbi Steinman, who is the leader of the Litvish world. And we will have somebody to represent the a proponent of the Satmar ideology, Rabbi Yitzchak Brown, who is a truly sincere Yerei Shemayim, Talmud Chacham, really an Adam HaShalem, a person of eminently respectable and, you know, worth of our, you know, admiration, as a lives of an incredibly sincere and, you know, holy lifestyle. And we will ask him to explain the Satmar opinion. Now, this is a very sensitive topic that we're discussing this week, and I get, you know, a lot of pushback. So here's a voicemail of somebody we had who was very upset that I asked the question of, should we be makar toiv to the Israeli soldiers who are meisa nefesh protecting our borders? I mean, if it would have been Raoul Wallenberg, who was saved us from many Jews from Nazis, or pick your, you know, if it's an American soldier or a UN soldier, which we would, if it's an Israeli soldier, he happens to be Jewish, and he's protecting you from basically today's iteration of Nazis, which are the very bloodthirsty Arabs that surround Israel, should there be? And I asked that question. Here's the response that somebody sent me by voicemail.
Hi, I wanted to say about the nonsense and the bizarre time of the chum and the stussin of our volume and the day's quizzes that you said this week about the matzav and Eretz Yisrael. I don't want to say anything about it because I don't consider you or your stussin enough to even bavard or even talk about, because everything I say won't be enough. I just want to say one thing, that don't think that because only a few people will call in and give and respond on your nonsense, don't think that means that only a few people care about this. I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of people that could be fuming, and they're going to care about the bizarre atayra of some British ox fed like you, people with vaz atayra, which is what you said. But I just want to tell you that most people are going to believe that not to even waste their time to call up and say they're there, because it's so push it, and it's just a waste of time, and it's like showing that you're in a tap to bavarn, that's why they're not going to call up. But I just want to make sure you know that. Thank you.
Now, from his response, I think we could say, doesn't sound like he agrees with me 100%. Right, but these are the types of feelings that we get, and I think it's fair to honor them by playing those who disagree with me. Interestingly, we will hear from Aaron Leib's spokesperson, who does say at some level, yes, we should record time, and Reb Chaim Shmulevitz certainly held that way. But it's just a question certainly worth discussing. Next week we will have, I don't know if it's next week, sometimes we skip, but we do have another leading Satmar proponent of the ideology, somebody, in fact, who arranges a lot of these meetings and protests, and who has met with both from David Soloveitchik, he will list you a list of the people he's met with, who are, you know, and we'll ask him to explain it as well. So you'll have two different proponents to explain the Satmar opinion. And here, before By the way, since this is a halacha program, I will give the halachic basis of the Satmar Rebbe Shita, and those who disagree with him, but neither of the Satmar proponents really wanted to go into it from halacha, they wanted to talk a bit from hashkafa, so I will do it on myself, I will give that introduction. I would like to add that all our shows will now be on Yeshiva World News. It'll be an additional outlet as started playing our weekly programs, and I think you would enjoy it there. Now, here are some of the questions that I would like you, the audience, to see. This is what always mystified me. I'm going to ask him, assuming the Satmar Rebbe was right, and the Zionist state, which only at its inception, Herzl and many of those were true apikorsim, but assuming the Zionist state is evil, so what do we do now? Do we just give it back to the Arabs, and do we take in like an Arab, we call back King Hussein, or is it the fellow from Syria, Assad? I mean, do we want Ahmadinejad? Like, which one? Sisi from Egypt, the head of Libya, what would you like Israel to look like today? You had a magic wand, you gave it to the Satmar Rebbe and said, okay, what would you do today? It mystifies me. I'd like to hear their response to this. Additionally, here's another question. Is today's Zionism, the Zionism of Herzl and Ben-Gurion and Echad Ha'am, I mean, they say over a story that Rav Amram Bloy was looking, there's a Rehov, Echad Ha'am, in Yerushalayim, and he had to go there, so he stopped the stranger and he said, Eifo Rehov Echad Ha'am Yemach Shemai. And the guy looked at him, there's no such a street. He couldn't utter the Zionist word without Yemach, because many of them, notwithstanding that do we or do we not use such an aphorism for a Jew, many of them were truly apikorsim who wanted to be oiki Yiddishkeit. The Chafetz Chaim says about the Yosevnikis that they were Amalek. But is today's Zionism the same thing? I mean, do the Israeli leaders today, are they anti-religion? Last year, there were $2.3 billion given to yeshivas. That means that the Israeli government is the biggest supporter of Torah in history. They give annually more than Mr. Reichman, who was truly the greatest supporter that we'll ever see in our lifetimes of yeshivas, maybe gave in his life. Astonishing. So would they say that about that too? And here's another question. So has Zionism changed? I mean, are they really true Zionists anymore? Or is it just about, look, we have to live here, let's defend our borders? And here's another question. Looking at the incredible success of Torah in Israel, I mean, according to the last census, this is 2 years old, there are 108,390 boys in Kollel and Yeshiva. It's the most ever in history. The Kollel movement in Eretz Yisrael is bigger than it's been since the Churban HaBayis. Fact. So when we look back, you know, how do we rate a stock or a fund manager's ability? We say, look, you have this opinion on the stock, you have that opinion, you check afterwards. Well, it's 50 years later. I mean, are you Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak? Would it be better if they weren't built? I mean, when anybody goes to Yerushalayim, does he say, oh my goodness? So looking back, was this Shita in fact wrong? The anti, you know, let's not have a state. We will ask him this question as well. Additionally, I want to ask them, after the Holocaust, I mean, the Holocaust showed nobody wanted us unless we were, when we were dead, they wanted us. We'll talk about the St. Louis, the boat that went from port to port to port with 1,000 Jews on it, saying, please, Cuba take us in, America take us in, Israel take us in. And everybody said, no, we don't want you. And they returned them to the gas chambers. Many of them died in the gas chambers. I don't know the amount, it was half of them. I mean, no, but don't we need some place to run? So how, Satmar Rebbe, can you explain this, Shita? And then lastly, we will ask them, if you believe, like the Satmar Rebbe writes a number of times, that Zionism is Avodah Zarah, well, we know you're not allowed to be Nene from Avodah Zarah. How do you stay in Israel? I mean, there are tens of thousands of, maybe hundreds, between the Eid HaChredis and Satmar. And I say the Achredis and Satmar because the Satmar Rebbe was the Ravid or the Gaivid of Yerushalayim for the Eid HaChredis. He was considered, right? So how do you say that halachically? These are the questions we will ask our Satmar representatives or the representatives of the Shita. And again, I would like to say that the people who are here are incredibly respectful, respectable, you know, dignified people who live a lifestyle that is, you know, I couldn't live much of their lifestyle. I mean, truly special people. So it's more of a discussion than a debate, a curiosity. What do you believe? They're intelligent, sane people. What do you believe? So so maybe we will all be more intelligent after these next two programs. Before we begin, I would like to give you just a halachic background of this. And the Satmar Rebbe in his Sfarim Divrei Yoel and Alagula V'Alatzmura bases his shita on a Gemara in Ksubis. It's on Afkuf Yad Aleph. We will post a plethora of Maror Mekayimus, you're welcome to see, where the Gemara basically brings a memra of Rebbe Yossi B'Rebbe Chanina, who says that Hashem was made three promises, three shvuos. One, Shalayalu Yisrael B'chayma. And Rashi says that they would not go back to Eretz Yisrael B'yad Chazaka. Right? Well, that's a debate, what it means. But the simple reading, B'yad Chazaka, means in force. The second one is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mashbiya Klal Yisrael Shalayimredu B'umais Ha'ilam, that they would not rebel against Umais Ha'ilam. And the third shvua was, he was Mashbiya, this time the Umais Ha'ilam of the world, the Akum of the world, that they will not make our diaspora too painful. So the Satmar Rebbe says it's a shvuah that God was Mashbiya Klal Yisrael not to return in force. And the entire premise of Zionism is to take Israel back with force, with an army, with the Tzahal, what they call today, right? At the time it was maybe the Irgun Tzahal. And he said this is against the shvuah. Additionally, it's a rebellion against the Umayyad Ha'ilam. And it's based on this. Now, those who counter this, and there are many, there's much written about it, we'll give Maror Mekayimus, will say something like, you know, it's an Agadat Gemara. The Gemara is not brought, not by the Rush, the first great Paisik, not by the Rambam, the Rishonim, Ramban, Rajba, Ritva, Meiri, Rambam, great codifier, doesn't bring it. Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring it. So it's an Agadata Gemara. Do we paskin from Agadata? We know we don't paskin from an Agadata. I'll give you a few examples. We do so occasionally, but very carefully. Somebody asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he said, the halacha is that, or rather the Gemara says, Toiv lo la'adam l'ha'alatzme l'kiv shanesh, throw yourself into a fire before being mavaza chaveri barabim, before being mavayish somebody. We learn it from Tamar, who was willing to be thrown into a fire rather than embarrass Yehuda. So we said, well, since Allah is you would have to kill yourself before embarrassing somebody, so you have a din, it has a din of ritzicha. If you see somebody about to embarrass somebody, is he a roideth? Is he a rodef? And therefore, since he's in effect killing the other person by embarrassing him, would you be allowed to shoot? And the implications of this are, the next time you go to a Sheva Brachas, and you know they're going to roast the chassan, or somebody's going to say something inappropriate, bring a knife along. Or if you're a Muslim, bring a suicide vest along. So, I mean, would you be allowed to do that? And Rav Shlomo laughed. He said, of course you can't do that. It's an agadah to Gemara. Can't make a person a roidev. I mean, there's a Gemara that discusses whether the Leviathan could drown the world, the two frolicking Leviathans. Drown the world with their playing. Now, could you imagine a Rav getting up in Shul and saying, since the Leviathan could, you know, doing what Harvey does, basically drown the world, and we know that there's a mitzvah, Ushmartim Esnafshei Sechem, it's incumbent upon every family to have a rowboat docked at their front door for should this occasion occur. I mean, there's a Gemara in Gittin that talks about how there's one mountain in Yerushalayim that if you do the math, had something like 4 billion people living in it, which was greater than the population of the entire world. So we know that there are many agadahs. Occasionally we do, it's done very cautiously. So this is one of the great arguments. Is it, now another one of the arguments against this Gemara is that there's actually a letter from the great Paisik, I shouldn't say Paisik, but he was known, the Meshe Chachma, the Arsamech, he was the Gadol Ador, I take back, he was known more as the Gadol Ador than the Paisik. So what does the Arsamech write? And then we will post it online. He says that after the Balfour Declaration, where the UN voted to allow Israel to return to its homeland, so he said it's not layalu b'chayma, they're not doing it against the wishes of the world, right? They're doing it with the consent of the world. It's you're legally authorized to do this. He says even if the shvuas are metaphorical, they're not relevant anymore. And then there are other achrayim, and this was, you know, by the way, the opinion that it's we will show that the Avnei Nezer took that opinion. La Halacha, he says, it's an Agadah. He says, you can't paskin. And there are many others. You have, You know, Rav Shiela Kutna, there are those who wrote a similar thing. There are those who wrote that the third Shavua was that they would not make the diaspora. They would not, they would not cause us to suffer in the Galus too much. And the halach is if one side of a treaty breaks apart, then it's batel. So they were meshabed us with the Holocaust, for example, much more midai, and therefore the Gimel Shavuos are not relevant anymore. Now, additionally, the question is, even if the Gimel Shavuos are, okay, that's fantastic. There are the Gimel Shavuos. If you disagree with all of the above and you say, it's not, even if it's nobody paskens the way, even if it's an agadata, even if they were caused, they destroyed, even if the Basu, you have to put four things aside. There's another question. I mean, the Jews had nowhere to go. Israel, if there would be no Israel, you know, many, just like the Holocaust proved, many would die. So the question is the Gimel Shavuos, it's true there's a Shavua, but is it Yerek Valiyav? Should we die for a Shavua? So the Satmar Rebbe takes, really, I think, quite an interesting step, and he says, yes, they're equivalent of it. Something that has no halachic basis in the Paiskim is the equivalent of Yerek Valiyav. He bases it on a morale. We will show them, if you go to Maram Akar, these are the halachic debates. If you go to the website, which is headlinestorah.com, we will present the Maram Akimus of both sides, and just as an understanding of where he was coming from. But is this the next two conversations will really be about the hashkafic basis more than the halachic basis. So let's go to our guests. We have a fascinating program. Let's start now. We have the great honor of having with us from Eretz Yisrael one of the great mechanchim of our generation. He's the Rosh Yeshiva of Yad Aaron. Rav Volba made him the head of the Vad Chizuk in Eretz Yisrael. He's a Yad Yamin of the Rashke Bahagur, a Baron Leib Steinman. We would like to welcome Hagoyin Rav Yeshua Eichenstein. Welcome, Rabbi Eichenstein.
Hello, good evening.
So, Rabbi Eichenstein, I know that you're, when we talk about the Rashke Bahagur for Rav Steinman, your name is right afterwards as somebody who's like closer to him than just one of the great Mekuravim. Certainly one of the only English-speaking Mekuravim. Could you give us a little bit of hashkafa into our attitude towards the Israeli army, towards soldiers, towards the draft, etc.? Give us a little bit of...
I want to first, before we get into this specific topic, I want to just tell over a story from the Chibinarov. By the Levi of the Chibinarov, I was working with my Shver, Rav Zolti, together with Avshalom Shvadron. And Rav Shom Shvadron told over a story from the Chazinish with the Chibinarov. Very interesting story. He said like this. There was once elections in Bnei Brak, and there was a question who to make a coalition with the Mizrahi or with the Mapam. The Mapam was a very leftist party, nearly communist. So they had to make a coalition. There was a question who to make a coalition with. With the Mizrahi or with the Mapam. So the Chazinish sent the Shaila to the Chibinarov through Rav Shalom Shvadron. So the Chibinarov answered Rav Shalom Shvadron, the Shaila of the Chazinish answered like this. I'm not on the spot. I'm not in Bnei Brak. And for me to answer this question, I have to make a halacha l'deiros. And I don't want to make a halacha l'deiros on this question. I should be on the spot. My answer would be Hayro Asho, and Hayro Asho I can't make because I'm not on the spot. Now, what did he mean to say? He meant to say like this. When he came back to the Chazinish of Shalom, and the Chazinish had Gvaldek Ano from the what the answer the Chibinarov. Now, what did the Chibinarov mean? He meant like this. If you're on the spot, you're judging a specific question. I know this person from Mizrahi, he might be a very fine person. Person could deal with. I know the person from Mapam. The person from Mapam might be a very, very difficult person to deal with. So my judgment here is not a general judgment if Mizrahi is better than Mapam. My judgment here on this specific instant, I say the Mizrahi is better than Mapam, or the opposite. The Mapam, I know the Mapam, and I know he's a very fine person. You could deal with him. And I know the person from Mizrahi, he's not a fine person. You can't deal with him. So I'm saying, take a collision with Mapam, not with Mizrahi. That's if I'm on the spot, I know all the little details. If I'm not on the spot, I'm judging this thing in a very general term. What is better, Mizrahi or Mapam? Whatever the reasons go into that. But Shabino said, I'm not just making a loch of the deiros on the shayla. I'm not on the spot, I'm not going to answer. This is a gewaltical limud, this maisa. If you're not on the spot, you don't know all the little details. All the decisions which go into the soydis of Hiroa Shaw are totally in knowing all the little details of knowing the people that involve all these things. And if you're not on the spot, you can't know all these little details. I think it's a very clear maisa.
Right. Very powerful story.
Another thing is, there are certain things. First of all, whenever you're talking about Hiroa Shaw, there's a Drosha Saram that says the Sanhedrin paskin Alocha Doderes and the Melech paskin Hiroa Shaw. And when there is no Melech, the Nosya Sanhedrin, the Godel Ador, has a din of a Melech. So in other words, he's saying there are certain shailas that you ask the Sanhedrin, which are all the big Talmidei Chacham of the door, and certain shailas you have to ask the Godel Ador, which is B'mokum the Melech. Things that are called Hiroa Shaw or only Shaykh to the Godel Ador. Mamet Yechidei Segula. Another thing, there's a Sfasemes in the beginning of office that says that there's a certain Chelik of Torah which is only Nimsa to the Godel Ador. This Chelik of Torah, the usual, the command, all parts of Torah are Nimsa to call Klal Yisrael, and there's a certain Chelik of Torah that are only Nimsa to the Godel Ador.
Right.
These Shailas of Tap, the army and so forth, or Nimsa only to the Gedolei Ador. People that are not the Gedolei Ador can't mix in these Shailas. These are Shailas of Hiroa Shaw, that's telling the Melech B'Yisrael, which are the Gedolei Ador.
Rav Eichenstein, I'm sort of ignorant. What's the Hiroa Shaw here? Like,
When you're talking about a certain chok of Gius, you're not talking about Halacha L'Doros. You have to deal with each instance separately. You have to know who is the government, who are people running it, who is the Sar Bitachon, who are the people in charge of the army. You're dealing with a special situation. You're not dealing with Halacha L'Doros and Shulchan Aruch.
Right.
And the whole Anhoga, from the time of the Medina until now, dealing with the Masar Bitachon was always Gedom of Hiroa Shaw. How you deal with this Sar Bitachon, how you deal with this Rosh Memshala, everything is a different story. And you have to be on the spot to deal with it, and you have to be from the Gedolei Ador that have the Hanhoga of this Hiroa Shaw of Klal Yisrael.
Right. So could you tell us, give us some understanding of what the issues are and what the Hiroa Shaw is? I mean, I don't think there's anybody who understands it better than you.
That I'm not sure of. There's a question of being here. What are the options here? What are the options here? Before there was a chok, all the time the Medina had, there was no chok. The Sar Bitachon gave up tour. There was never a chok till recently, when the Begat said you have to have a chok.
What does it mean, a chok? I apologize. Like, what is that?
A law. There was no law.
What is it? It was just done without any law.
The people were part of a draft because the Sar Bitachon made such a thing.
There was no law about it. Okay.
There was no law. The Sar Bitachon said, we're giving him a dihui.
Right. And now what happened?
Once they came to the Supreme Court, they said, you need a law. So then they made Choktau. Choktau was a certain law, which lasted for 10 years. Then the Supreme Court again took it down.
Okay.
Choktau was that when you cut the age of 25, you could go for 1 year to the army, and if you decide not to be in the army, then you don't have to go to the army. You have 1 year. And if you want to go into the army, there's always different ways of making it much easier than a regular army course. That was Choktau. Then the Supreme Court said it's not justice. It's not justice because it's being partial to the yeshivas.
Favoritism.
Favoritism, yeah. So then it came Lapid into the government. And then they tried to do things which were very, very big sakone. Then came the new government, and they made this hesder, which is pretty good.
So
it's the best you could do,
And what is it? What is and what is that? What is the new law? Like what is it? What's the new arrangement?
The new law is that yeshiva students have a dichui like they had all the years. It's not a ptur, it's a dichui. It's a referment, what do you call deferment? And there's a certain quota of amount of people that have to go into the army every year from the Haredi community. They agreed to this because the idea behind it is that anybody that wants to learn does not have to be drafted. It's not learning. It's not going to learn. That's not the point of this. If you want to learn, nobody can be drafted. If you don't want to learn, we're not going to stop you from going to the army.
So what's wrong with that? It sounds...
There's nothing wrong with it. It's not... Nobody's happy about somebody going to the army. But the idea of all the doers since the become of Medina was that somebody that wants to learn cannot be drafted. Torah has to be in the sky by Klal Yisrael. If you go to the army, you can't vax as a Gadol B'Torah. You can't vax as a become a Tochem.
Right.
But somebody that wants to go to the army, you're not going to have to stop him. Now, there's enough that want to go to the army that the amount of people that have to be drafted every year that go to the army will definitely be filled.
Right. So I apologize again. I don't understand what changed. Before it was a deferment.
The same thing, it's a deferment.
So what's the difference?
Now, there's a certain amount that every year from the Haredi community will have to go to the army, which will be that or anyway. They're going anyway.
Well, but why? But if there's a tour, why? If there's a deferment, why do they have to go to the army?
If somebody's a real yeshiva student, doesn't have to go to the army. But there's
right.
a certain amount that they have to, every year has to be drafted, not drafted, go into the army from the Haredi community, with that number anyway.
So what changed? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Nothing really changed. Only that now they say a certain amount of the Haredim have to go to the army, which they go anyway. Even before this law, they were going anyway.
So the only difference is that before they went anyway, and now they're saying there is a certain amount that have to go regardless.
But anyway, they're going to go. And anyway,
right.
that number is going to be filled anyway.
Right. So why has this caused so many riots? Explain why people are laying down in the streets and beating up soldiers. Like, I don't get it.
They are afraid that once you give in to the army, you don't know what it'll be in 10 years from now. You know what it'll be in 15 years from now. Which is the same thing was always true. They never, before there was a law, it was always pending on the Sar Bitachon.
So what has created all this unrest? It sounds so minor.
They're claiming that they're giving in to the army. You don't know what'll be in 10 years. And we live only by day here in this country. Nobody knows what will be tomorrow. Morgen mit Mashiach kommen.
Right.
This is the Yisod of Hayro Asho. And the Hayro Asho, there's no question, this is the right Hayro Asho. To do this law, and Baruch Hashem, people are learning, and whoever wants to learn is learning, and it's good.
So why are they marching and saying it's Gzeirah, it's a Dair Shel Shmad, it's Gzeirah Shel Shmad, it's Yerek Val Yaver, I don't get it. Like, Yerek Val Yaver, because people go to the army who would anyway go to the army, I don't understand that. Like, explain to me, it just sounds so one-sided. Like, what's the Yerek Val Yaver here?
What's the Horgel Yaver? Because there's a certain amount that have to go to the army.
Well, can I just ask you as an aside? You know, my wife was in Eretz Yisrael just 2 weeks ago, and I have a brother-in-law who lives in Beit Shemesh. So he has a son who's a Hezdernik, goes to a very good yeshiva. He has long payas. He learns by smada. He's also very Zionistic, and he came home, and he said, "I'm running to Mincha," and his mother started screaming, "You can't go to Mincha in your uniform because they're going to beat you up in Beit Shemesh." And my wife called me, and I said to her, "You know, I davened in the same shul in Beit Shemesh near my brother-in-law, and there was a few Natori Karta guys there 1 year who had just come back from Iran from marching with Ahmadinejad." So I said, can maybe somebody explain to me the hashkafa, where a guy who's marching with Ahmadinejad is davening over there, but somebody who's protecting the borders, which could arguably be a Mohammed mitzvah, is afraid to go to shul. Just explain that, the logic.
See, these people are against the Medina and anything that has anything to do with the Medina. We accept the Medina, what Rav Reuven called de facto recognition. They don't accept the Medina, and they think that the army like is the worst thing. There's two things. If you talk about something remaining a shame at Torah mitzvahs, going to the army, it's taki true. There's a very big sakona.
Even Nachal Haredi? Even if they go to Nachal Haredi?
There's sakonas. But it's not because we're against the Medina. See, these people in Torah character are against the Medina. Any serving the army is like saying you serve the Medina. That's not our hashkofa. Our hashkofa is we'd accept the Medina de facto. We don't say going to the army is wrong. We just face it. First of all, anybody wants to learn. If he goes to the army, we're not vaksos in Torah. That's what you want to learn. We're not against the army be'etzim. We recognize the Medina de facto. It's not a question. If you're serving the army, that's a terrible thing. We're afraid of the army because it's very hard to be ashamed of the mitzvahs in the army. There's all types of misyonis there.
Rabbi Chizik, can I ask you a question? Do they believe that if the... I mean, I personally believe that if the Israeli army left the borders, there would be a shechita like there was in Nazi Germany.
That's
right?
True.
So what do they believe? Like, if somebody going to the army... I mean, David HaMelech had an army, Shlomo HaMelech had an army. They hate us so, so much, the Arabs. So... it's with doubtless that there could be a Yerida near Shemayim and going to the army, not unlike going to college. I mean, once, you know, Rav Futner used to say, he would say that it used to be that the yeshiva was a mishkan. Today it's a teva. When you leave the walls of the yeshiva, the kaisa yeshiva, you go to college, these are all dangerous places. But at the end of the day, they would kill us if we didn't protect the borders.
What's the question about it?
So what do they believe? I don't understand that. Do they say also to go to college is Yerek Val Yaver? If you leave yeshiva, it's Yerek Val Yaver. Like, what is the philosophy that is driving this?
They want to separate themselves from the Dina, and they don't want to have any part of it. So, fine. They don't take money from the government. Oh, fine. It's after Hashkofen, fine. But that's not our Hashkofen.
Can I ask you another question?
We accept the Dina de facto. We go to the Knesset, we go to the Prius. We do what we can do. We try to rativa, we could rativa, and that's it.
Rabbi Erzi, I have a question. I miss this just from like somebody not there. You know, the healthcare in America, it's maybe been a long time since you've been here, but it costs an average family $20,000 a year for Blue Cross or Blue Shield. It's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
In Eretz Yisrael, it was rated by Bloomberg as the fourth best a medical care in the world, and it's given for free, which means that
but very, very cheap.
Yeah, which means all these Natori Kartaniks and all these people who are saying it's Gzeirish Mad and they're the worst imaginable and et cetera, and they're lying down, when they have babies, do they go to the local hospital? Do they take the medical care that's so highly subsidized from the Medina, or do they say, no, we don't want to take from them anything and we pay our doctors out of pocket?
What do you think?
I'm saying, isn't that so hypocritical?
I'm not here to answer the Torah character.
Yeah, but it's more than the Torah character. I believe, isn't that, you know, the marches where they're burning soldiers and calling Zerishol Shmat, I saw from the, you know, the Peleg. This is the you know, when he speaks, there's Yerik Val Yaver, Zerishol Shmat signs. I mean, if it's Yerek Val Yaver, why are you using their medical care? Why are you using their hospitals? Why are you taking subsidized bread and subsidized milk and everything you do? And why do you have the protection? Like, I'm just asking, Mineu Bey, isn't it hypocritical?
I don't have the answer to the Ricardo. I don't hold the Rashkofa. We're against the Rashkofa. I don't have the answer to the Rashkofa.
And is Peleg much different than them?
They're not against the Medina Betzim. they're against, they're afraid of a certain Hanhoge. I don't want to answer them either. I'm not with them. I don't hold with them. I don't want to answer them.
So let me ask you another question, Rabbi Eisenstein. When Reb Chaim wrote against the Medina, you know, the Zionists were meant, they wanted to be Eicher Yiddishkeit, right? That was, he said they want to be Eicher Yiddishkeit. Your average Israeli today, is he really interested in being Eicher Yiddishkeit? I mean, I know a lot of Israelis, they say, listen, you know, they see me as a Haredi, so they say, you know, we want you to contribute to the army, contribute your taxes, this. And so I said, but are you against the fact that I'm Haredi? They said, we're just disinterested. You could be blue, green, yellow, pink. We're just a country. We're not Zionists anymore. We just want to be economically feasible. We want to be militarily feasible. We don't care. Has it changed since Reb Chaim? Like, do you see that the Zionists want to be Eicher Yiddishkeit, or is it just people trying to say?
The most of the people here, according to the latest survey, are Mesorati. They're not anti-Dati. They're not anti-Haredi. Most of the people here.
I mean, 80% fast on Yom Kippur, I read.
Yeah,
I read.
Achad Am didn't
fast on Yom Kippur.
There's a small minority that run the press, that run the media here, that are very anti. And they're very afraid of the Haredim becoming a majority here. But
the normal people here
are not so anti.
So my question then is, all this, you know, Reb Chaim, at the time, the Zionists were fervently, is it still, I mean, the people who lived 100 years ago, you know, Yalde Tehran, I heard them screaming, there was a Nasifa, Yalde Tehran, and I said, Yalde Tehran happened 60 years ago, and it's like, aren't they like sort of fighting ghosts from 100 years ago? Like, aren't there new wars we have today? Isn't it fair to say that...
You know the Chazinish? It's like this. Chazinish was matter to speak Ivrit in the schools. So they came to him, how can you be matter of Ivrit? It was such a mechom against Ivrit. How can you be matter to speak Ivrit in the Chinchatzmoy schools and so forth? So Chazinish said like this. After the First World War, they built a fortress between Germany and France. What was it called?
The Maginot Line.
The Maginot Line. It was a fortress you couldn't penetrate. Second World War came, the Nazis came in from the north, from Normandy.
Because of tanks, the implementation
what?
Because World War I didn't have tanks, and World War II became very mobile, so fortresses became obsolete with tank
one
warfare.
One of the generals of the First World War from France went to his barrier, the Magna Line, and said, what are you doing, Germany? We're supposed to come in over here. How can you come in from the north?
Right.
So the Chazinish said, you know, we have different wars today. We have different fronts. Years ago, the front was Ivrit. Now that's not our front. It's not the battle we're fighting today.
Would you say, Rav Eichenstein, I spoke to a mechanech in Eretz Yisrael from Leiv Aryeh, Rav Lapian, and he said that the battle of today, as he said, is the internet and pornography.
That's the battle today.
He said the battle is pornography, the internet, instant access to the worst things on a moment's notice by accident, and he says that Bachrim and Yeshiva come to him from the biggest yeshivas, the sons of Rebbes, the Einiklach of Rosh Yeshivas, that they were matama themselves in the worst ways. He says, that's today's battle.
Of course that's today's battle. There's no question about it.
Is anybody becoming a Zionist? Do you know anybody?
No,
who...
it doesn't exist anymore. No becomes a Zionist. There's no danger of becoming a Zionist today. The danger of the street.
So, Rabbi, when people attack soldiers, I mean, shouldn't we have some midah of hakaras hatayv to somebody who puts their life at risk to keep 400 million people who would like to drink our blood, to keep them away, to people who sit in 110 degrees temperature and wearing their uniforms by checkpoints with suicide bombers? I mean, we do fabulous things, and ein olam neskayim elabeschut. I mean, we know that, but shouldn't we have Hakaras HaTov, just like we have Hakaras HaTov to a fireman in America.
Doing things what they should do, and they're definitely admiring what they're doing, but it's not for us. But they're definitely admiring what they're doing. There's no question about it.
So when we see an Israeli soldier, should there be a measure of Hakaras HaTov? Look, we don't want to join the army because we want to learn in yeshiva, but what you're doing, we owe you thanks. Is that a fair statement?
This is something they're doing. What the right thing for them to do, there's no question about it. There's no question about it. It's not for us, but they're doing the right thing.
So I want to ask you another question. There's a clip, a video clip online of Hagoyen Tzadik, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who I met many times when I was in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, who, in my opinion, is the most mild, one of the most mild-mannered people, gentlest and kindest people I ever met. And he referred to the leader of Peleg, who is a known Rosh Yeshiva, and he called him, he called him a Zakein Mamre, and it's on the internet, and there's a video of it, etc. What would cause Rav Steinman, as well as Rav Chaim, to be so upset about it? Like, okay, we have a difference of opinion. You hold like this, and
hold,
I hold like
they
this.
They hold it to Sekona for Klal Yisrael.
And why would that be?
It's a very lengthy discussion. It's not for the public. They hold it to Sekona for Klal Yisrael.
But could you give us any tune as to what's the Sakana?
The Sakana is that type of anhogi will only bring a Churban. That's their day.
Is it because of Sinas Yisrael? Like, what is it?
No, if you want to say that you can't go, you can't register to the army and make only Havganot, and that'll bring the Yeshua. They hold that anhogi is a Sakana for Klal Yisrael.
Because why?
Because it won't bring the right Tzoyus. Every bocher that goes to jail is a sekona ruchnis for him. You don't go to the army, you don't register. When they catch you, the police can go to the jail. That's a sekona gedolah.
So they're upset, they're his snag, this is because of the jail?
Not because of the jail. This anhoge will bring only a chum to Klal Yisrael. That's their day.
I understand. But you say it's not a conversation for the public. What's missing?
They hold it's a sekona for Klal Yisrael.
I understand.
This anhoga, they hold it's a sekona.
Okay, I think you gave us a very clear thing. We thank you very much.
Okay, so Vayna Yeshua for Klal Yisrael, and Alavayis Mizrechet Pagula Shlema Bikoriv.
Amen. Thank you.
Okay, call to.
We have on the phone with us Rav Yitzchak Brown, who is a Marbitz Torah, a Satmar Chassid from, I believe, childhood, lifelong Satmar Chassid, who's often called upon to explain various, you know, subjects in Yiddishkeit. He's the Me'atike Hashmiya of the Satmar Rebbe. Welcome, Rav Yitzchak.
Good afternoon, Rabbi Lichtenstein.
So, could you tell us briefly, there's a big brouhaha going on in Eretz Yisrael about, you know, Gius, etc. Could you explain it to us, the Satmar Shita, about this?
I think there is a basic question that needs defining where, how Satmar understands the problem of the ideal called Zionism, where that stands in today's society, and that will shed some light on how they approach the issue of Gius. Zionism is an ideal, and it was created as an ideology. Some of them, the basic ideology actually was a nationalism. The history shows that the idea of the nationalism came after the Dreyfus trial. Certain people felt hurt that Klal Yisrael in Galus is not being respected, and felt that they will help the cause of the respect of Klal Yisrael by having a homeland. The homeland not necessarily had anything to do with the geography where it is, but rather just that something should exist. The idea of the geography picking the spot that we know and really are looking to return to, known as Eretz Yisrael, was an afterthought, basically as a marketing ploy to get many different types of people to want to hook on to the idea, and that was the idea behind the party known today as the Mizrahi, where the idealism of returning to Eretz Israel took roots, and that's what they were, that was what they were going for. And but the ideal actually was a homeland for Klal Yisrael, for Am Yisrael to have a homeland. Most Gedolei Yisrael, most being everybody probably with the exception of who later joined the Mizrahi, felt that idea, that idealism, is something that is in contrast to the Gezeirus HaGolus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us and told us to endure until we will come back to Bias HaMashiach. And everybody saw that movement as part of a impediment to Bias HaMashiach. And that was something that was pretty much universal in Klal Yisrael until later on became a difference in Bias, which will lead us to our discussion in Gius. How do we deal with the fact that there is something called the State of Israel? But the idealism of Zionism was something that was across the board, was something that the Gedolei Yisrael frowned upon. Is Zionism alive? Is Zionism something that still is an issue and is something that should still even be discussed? Well, basically, if we go with what the Gedolei Yisrael taught us, that Zionism is an impediment to Bias HaMashiach, the pure fact that in Tavshin Ayin Zayin Elul we are sitting and discussing it's in Galus and we are still waiting for Mashiach, then obviously the impediment is still out there. So the ideal of Zionism is still out there hurting us. And therefore, there is something that Klal Yisrael still has to be misfollowed, should be taken away from us, and we should be zeicha to the Geula Shleima Mikorov. There, in the United States we live under the idea of the three branches of government, and one of them being the judiciary, which is based on the ideal that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are living documents. Living documents being that the mission statement on what the country was built on still exists and has to be interpreted and understood in today's current events and in current situation. How does current society live with the framework of the mission statement of this living document? So does the State of Israel have a living document, a mission statement. It's the Megillat Atzmaut, which was the Declaration of Independence for the creation of the state, which started off with one of the first debates on the writing and the verbiage of the declaration was, do we include Shem Shemayim? Do we include the Eibishter's name and have that even mentioned the Megillat Atzmaut? That was a big, major discussion. There was a compromise that it starts off with the words Tir Yisrael v'Gei Aloi, which many a time later on, some of the founders, those that were what we call today the left wing of the founders, explained very clearly that the compromise was that we are not referring to Shem Shemayim at all. We are referring to the strength of Israel as a nation and therefore the step towards its redemption. And that was a compromise, which basically said that did away with was part of the mission statement on what the ideal of Zionism is built upon. And that ideal still exists. That ideal still goes on.
So Rabbi Brown, let me ask you a question. If he could take a magic wand today and say, okay, you could do whatever you want, what would he do with Israel?
He would return it back to I don't want to give the date, but pre-29.
So you would give it back. We would be under Arabic rule today.
No, I didn't say it. Who says that?
Well, it was Turkey.
Geography of the Middle East has changed hands over and over and over and over many, many, many times.
So who would it be? Pick your favor. You have a wand. You can do whatever you want. Where would it be?
If I do whatever I want, I don't have to worry where it would be. If I return it back to the UN, I know and I believe that Mashiach is around the corner. I have a problem. I don't have a solution. I don't have a practical solution.
I don't know if I should pull the plug.
I don't know what to be misfollowed. I know what to be misfollowed for. We have to get out of this.
What are you being
misfollowed
for?
We know and we believe that we're in Golos because you sent us here, and only you will take us home.
But he's a leader. What does a leader do? You have an Israel, you have a leader, a great the Satmar Rebbe has thousands, hundreds of. What would he do? He's in charge.
Now you're discussing the practical life, right?
What would he say today? What would he say? Do what?
Okay. Very good, very good. A good question, and this might shed some light on the issue that we now call gifts. The Satmar Rebbe felt strongly that if I become a conscientious objector to the government of Israel, that will keep me out of certain situations. We'll come back to this in a second. But when situations do arise, Askonis was always on his forefront.
Now that the intermarriage rate in America is around 70% by the secular, if Israel did not, you know, 1%. I mean, except with the Russians, there's very little intermarriage. There's almost none. Medina doesn't allow it, right? So if we wouldn't have Israel, we would have, instead of 5 million Jews there, we'd have 1.5 million Jews. The rest would be intermarried if they were living in America. Now that there's no intermarriage, at least they're marrying under the Rabbanut, they're marrying. So whereas in America, the Freie are disappearing, the Reform, over there at the end of the day, They're getting married. Al pi halacha, the gittin is all. We saved the lives of 3 million. The fact that we would be under Arabic rule, and you know, even if they would not dislike us, because we're pre 29, right? But look, it's not a friendly place to live in the Arabic world. Be it Syria, be it Libya, be it Iraq, be it Iran. I mean, not a good place. And certainly, if you're a Jew, it wouldn't be a good place. So do we say, let's agree with all the Satmar Rebbe's shitas from, you know, terrible, and therefore should we abolish Israel, bring them back under Arabs, let the Eden intermarry? Would we destroy all these yeshivas? Like, what do you want? What's the practical? You had a point. The Zionists with the Ferlach HaKaifrim, they were on Malik, etc. Where does that leave us today? Look at the benefits. We have it's created Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim, the biggest Harbatzis Torah in 1,000 years. What is the solution? I'm just looking for, besides us throwing ideological stones, what is the practical solution?
I'll ask you this in reverse.
Okay.
I am sure we all believe that the day that Mashiach comes, things will be only rosy for Klal Yisrael.
Right.
Correct? If we pass the Lake Shmuel or not, Olam Kimenogin,
right.
But definitely the problems, the way they exist, Yoim Yoimi, are going to be addressed very differently. And
okay.
It's something we will sit and hope for.
Okay.
If we believe that that's the impediment, do we have a right to say, I want to hurt myself because this is my short-term solution? Do I still have to say Kilamat Shema Tov Benecha Asei? The answer out loud has to be yes, and nobody could argue. Just because right now I'm in a situation where I don't see a way out, it doesn't say that let me start compromising.
So let's go back to the Satmar Rebbe writes that it's Amalek. And he writes, it's Dairi Shal Shmad, he called Rav Kook Haman, or he implied that he's Haman. If he were alive today, what would he do? Would he say, let's bring some Arab Arab leader, would he close the yeshiva? Like, just want to know, what would he do? What is the goal of Fatima when they protest? What end is the desire? I mean, I know you start the Masechta, you want to finish the Masechta. You go to yeshiva, you want to get smicha. What is the goal? I think it's a very simplistic question.
The goal is we learn Shlaim Erech Abarach Mitoshev. The impediment to that goal is Zionism as a fact. You mentioned three things, and those are three totally different topics. You mentioned the area of what happened in terms of, do I invite Arabs in and they are here out to kill me? In history, there is a very strong argument that until nationalism became an issue in that area, there was no larger number of anti-Semitic incidents than anywhere else in the world. Okay. Zionism really, I can't think of the right word, but
exacerbated anti-Semitism.
Incited a lot of the anti-Semitism that was there.
Okay.
If you read certain books, and that depends if you read right or left Zionism.
We could agree with this, and therefore, so let's continue. We agree that Zionism definitely creates more anti-Semitism, certainly among the Arabs. Agree.
And unfortunately, in a lot part of the world. I mean, I'm not sure.
Agree. There's no doubt about it.
The ADA has done more damage than itself.
Okay, so now we're post that. What do we do today?
Again, it's not a question of what do we do today. If it gets to the point where we can't, we might have to move, yes.
So what does Satmar want? That we should close Eretz Yisrael and move?
No, Satmar says that we have to, that Eretz Yisrael has to be closed because only Mashiach could come.
Okay, so the goal is that given the fact that the Zionists are in Eretz Yisrael today, or the remnants of whatever it is, I don't want to get political, we should all move from Eretz Yisrael and leave Eretz Yisrael and let the Palestinians take it back.
We don't have to move if I could live my life of Shmir Skima Torah Mitzvah there.
So we should stay in Eretz Yisrael.
Like I could live in Dubai, lovely. And I'm not talking about the geography. I'm talking about the democracy and the state of, not that Yerushalayim is Dubai. That's Chassam Shalom to say that.
Okay. So we should stay in Israel.
We can stay in Israel as long as Shmir Torah Mitzvah is possible.
Okay, now, next question. Okay, good. Next question. Should we or we should we not defend the borders of Israel?
Now, here's my question. I have a question because...
It's sort of a yes or no answer.
No, it isn't
Should we or should we not defend the borders? It's just a simple question.
The answer is no.
We should not defend the borders.
We can't defend the borders.
So we should let the Arabs come in.
Now you're saying, what's my reverse? The answer is, again, I put myself into a position.
Without a doubt, you put yourself into a position where if you don't defend the borders, the Arabs will... So we should not defend the borders, and we should pick ourselves up and leave. That's what you said. We put ourselves into a position where the only people defending the borders are Zionists. And if they were to not defend the borders, it would be dangerous. And therefore, we should, in a perfect world, not defend the borders and therefore pick ourselves up. I'm not challenging you or attacking you. I'm just trying to find out what is the platform. That's all.
If that is the only way to exist there, I can't live there.
So can I ask you a question? Just a simple. Yerushalayim is full of Satmar Hasidim. I mean, there's, I don't know how many, tens, 100,000, et cetera.
Why
are they living there?
There is a internal yearning for every Erechi to live in Eretz Yisrael and want to be close to
Mokra Masha'ina Shamlakech Bomeracious Hashona Vadach Rishona.
But not if it's against Halacha. But not if it's against Halacha and Hashkafa.
But what? No, once it, my Halacha and my Hashkafa doesn't allow it, yes, I leave.
Right. So why don't they leave?
If I could eat out a way of being there, then you could understand why people are there. I
know, but they can't eat out. But they can't eke out a way without the Zionists defending the border. So they're doing it in a way that is us. So why would they leave? I could tell you that if somebody came to me and they said the only way to live in America is to be Oved Avodah Zarah, the next day I would pick up my family, I would sell my business, and I would go to some place where it's halachically permissible because we live in under the rubric of the Shulchan Aruch. So you're saying that we should...
Let's just say something. In terms of expressing a decree on anything of living or not living, our rebbes have taught us all throughout the years, and when I say our, because I don't want to limit it to the understanding that this was Safarov, in general, to tell a person where to go and where to live is really takes a Navi, not only a Ruach HaKodesh. Where a person lives and where he settles has a lot to do with the big picture and the big plan of what the Eibusha has for every person in the world. And therefore, most Rebbes in the last 150 years refrained from telling people where to go to live. So it's hard to say. But once every individual gets to the point where it now is a stira, it's now a direct contradiction with my halacha and hashkafa, it behooves him to move.
So my question is, all these satmar chassidim,
I can't tell him to move, it behooves him to move.
So you're saying that if they were really honest satmar chassidim and whatever the Eidach Reidus is, it behooves them to move and to leave Eretz Yisrael?
I can't say that as a group, and every person has to individually be able to evaluate his matzah.
If we would agree, Rabbi Yitzhak, we would agree that if in Muncie, where we both live, they came out with American government said, when you get up in the morning, you have to be mishtachvil letzelem, right? We would, the next day, we'd be on a plane, right?
That is true, because we don't have a way. However,
if somebody is
1992 in Spain.
No, so I'm saying the
general crowd left. There were people who stayed.
So, but the Eidach Reidus, are Hasidim of the Satmar Rebbe. They said he's the Ravid of Yerushalayim. They follow his Shittas. He said it's Avodah Zarah. He said it's Amalek, and they stay there. It seems that they're doing something that's really usher. And I mean, Misrap ain't Rambam writes on Misrap in Bashera that it's Yerik Val Yavar. It's Chayiv Misa. If this is the Shita, I don't understand how they could stay there.
But you're questioning an individual.
I'm questioning the Eidach Reidus, which is the organization that he was the Ravid of, which is the backbone of the Shita in Eretz Yisrael. They are all, according to this conversation, in some element, they're Avaryonim. I can't accept that.
In some element, they have issues that they have to explain.
But big issues of kfira, issues of what the Satmar Rebbe calls Avodah Zarah.
The etzem is an Avodah Zarah. Am I part of it?
Is it nenin me'atzah sheira? What's the halacha? Are you allowed to be nenin? If they're protecting your borders, the halacha is if you're nenin me'atzah sheira, the Rambam writes in Uchas Avodah Zarah and in Deis, it's Yerug Val Yava.
No, that it's only if you're moedav Avodah Zarah.
If you're nene, ain't misrapin basheri, you're not being moedi, you're just being hanur. You're taking a pill.
Rambam says that misrapin from a roif that's an over the way to zero.
So I'm telling you that you don't have to be makir, you have to be nene. You're being nene
from the way to zero, not from the over the way to zero.
Well, the whole, it's one big mahalach. You're being done from their police departments, from their fire departments, from their hospitals, from their roads, from their soldiers. I don't understand how they could stay.
at the moment, the Matthias, to use the Rebbe's words, is you can't spit or you can't swallow. They put you in a position where yes, it's you can't spit or swallow, but therefore if you eke out your way of life, that's what you want to go to.
But not if you're being nene from an Atzei Asherah.
I think in Hilchos Avodah Zarah we could easily differentiate between
Nehana
from Atzei Asherah with the Shadom Shanena or Nehana from a Matzah.
He calls that a Zionist Avodah Avodah Zarah. It's no big Avodah than that. He says that the worst Avodah Zarah ever. He says that it's Mizuyef Mitoicha. It's bigger than an Avodah Zarah. But let me move this conversation forward. So it's 30 some odd years since the 36 years I believe since the Yael Moshe was Nifta, right? Duk Satmar Rebbe. 38 years, and he said the Zionists are Amalekim, it's Derech Shulshma, the whole works, right? It's 38 years later, and it's probably more than 38 because he was Ma'arich Yamim. I don't know at the end if he, but it's certainly 38, we could agree, right? When you look at Eretz Yisrael, it's been the greatest flourishment of Yiddishkeit in forever. I mean, there's, 70,000 Yungalite in Kail today. It's never in since the Churban Abayis, there hasn't been something like Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. I mean, you have the coils are full of Talmidei Chachamim you could talk to in Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch and in 60 Masechtos. There are real Gaonim who know, right? So clearly, whatever Israel created, both with Zionists who were Kaifrim, but many who were not, like you have the Hezderniks who are many, Grois Erlich Yidin, right? So clearly, whatever they've done has worked spectacularly for the Haredim, for Yiddishkeit. So isn't it fair to say that when we look back in history and we say there was somebody who said, don't go to Eretz Yisrael, it's going to be, could it be that he would, if he was here today, he would say, you know what, I made my point, I said to everybody how dangerous it is, I was Maimid Gidorim, I built walls, I don't want to use the Chaim, it's a play on words, but I built walls, I established me, the Brisk Rav, and because of that, but look how incredibly successful Eretz Yisrael was, it's undeniable, it's the most, right? We rebuilt the Matzav Torah, and he would actually be very happy with what was going on in Eretz Yisrael today?
The concept that things look nicer and better, and there's no arguing that there's a lot of Torah today in general and in Eretz Yisrael that there never was. But it's not because of Zionism, in spite of Zionism. In spite of everything they've done to hurt our growth, we've been growing. It's not because of them, it's in spite of them.
Well, Rabbi Yitzchak, the fact that they shtel davek the makim, right, and they, B'nai Barak, Yerushalayim, it can't be ICA's Perchas Ba'avir, right? And the borders have to be protected, and we do need hospitals. So when we say despite, maybe we see despite the fact that many of them had no ahava of Torah and Yerushalayim, but we can say it's despite the Metzias, the fact that they gave us the gvil to be able to open our yeshivas, to live, for the Bate Dinim to have a place, for the Yungalite to have diris, for the Frumma people to be able to, the ability, and more than that, the 2 billion plus that they give the yeshivas a year. So we could say it's despite the fact that maybe the original founders wanted to be, or some of them, I don't know all of them, there were some Erlicha, wanted to be Eiker Adas, but we can't deny the Metzias this, that the Makim that they give us.
There is a Metzias that there is Torah flourishing there. But there is also a Metzias that, an understanding that if the Makim still exists, we're missing something at Klal Yisrael.
Without a doubt.
If we don't have the passion for that, what we're missing, then that puts into question our whole understanding of what Torah is all about. I can't compromise on Torah and the kiyum and the koch for Torah based on the quantity of Torah.
But hello, when you see the Yungalite in your Shalayim and the Nebrak and the fervor of the davening and the tefillah, I find it difficult to believe that these people have sfeikis and emuna.
There has to be something that it hurts to understand that if we're there is in Golos, we're here. One of the biggest purposes from where that the Rebbe said he will send us in Golos is to teach us to be mekabel oyla Golos. And to understand where we are, Geir Yisi Beretz Nachria, and it makes no difference what the label on the sign says, we're in Eretz Nachria until the Eibishter takes us home. If we don't live that, we're causing ourselves to be here longer and longer until we really understand this is not where we want to be.
So is it possible then that if the Satmar Rebbe in heaven is looking down on Eretz Yisrael today, he would acknowledge the fact that the Pricha of Torah there is almost unheralded. There's never been this amount of people in a koil in history, I think, from Zman HaBayis, right?
Probably not.
He would say that having Israel in America, intermarriage among the Fraya is 70%. In Israel, because of the fact that all marriages have to go through the Rabbanut, that means 70% are not being intermarried, which means out of the 4 million fry of Israelis, there's 2.8 million neshamas that are saved. He would say that the soldiers, certainly individuals who are maisa nefesh, they give their lives, that they're doing, that they're being maisa nefesh for Klal Yisrael. But at the same time, we still have to scream chai v'kayim and not make the mistake of thinking that Zionism, the way the purists believed it, should Chas V'Shalom replace Emuna. Is that a possibility?
There is a story, and you could fill it in because everybody uses a different name for the story, where they said if we could compromise and not have so many mitzvahs efes and so many restrictions, quote-unquote, there would be a bigger flourishment of Yiddishkeit in general. And it depends, again, whichever godly you want to say, he said, fine. But to negotiate, we need two sides. There's a Torah side, and there's your side. There's nobody on the Torah side saying, let's sacrifice certain echus for kamus. To say that, and you put together in one pot, and I just want to say that we have to separate that. To say that the intermarriage story with the Chilulim, you put it all as one hatzlacha, it totally isn't. The intermarriage story is a story where we're negotiating on the Eibishter's terms and nobody has a right to do it. The Eibishter needs kiyum mitzvahs in shleimus, all together. It's a package, take it or leave it. It's not a pick or choose. So that's a total different discussion. The kollel of issues, I hear you. But here is the question. For years and years and years, we are mispalel Yizgadel v'Yizgadel Shmei Rabba. And that is that Shemoy Sholem v'Kisei Sholem, right? We want HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name should be complete the way it was. Later, we had a big bracha that says Al Yisrael, Al Rabbono, Talmidein, Kalsamide Samidein. But the key to all of this is Yizgadel v'Yizgadel Shmei Rabba. If the understanding that the what holds back, what's the impediment to Yizgadel Shmei Rabba is the existence of a state, Al Yisrael is an afterthought.
Respectfully, Rabbi Yitzhak, respectfully, it's a theory, but it's historically it doesn't hold because for thousands of years before there was Zionism, for reasons that B'Kafshi D'Rechban Olamali, I'm a Maimon, but I will never understand why, Rabbi Nishalom has his time. When there's going to be the Yatzbach Berkadei V'Karei Mashiachei, we don't know when it will be. In the times of Chizkiah, when it says every little girl knew whole Hilchas Tumah.
I hear what you're saying that we don't have why or when. Part of the teachings are, we know sort of, I mean, the Rebbe tells us why we're in Golus and what's going to take us out of it. And the Rebbe's Mavarer many a time, and he said it once, Kol Nidre at night, says, I'm standing here on Kippur, and I am telling you, the only reason for Mashiach not being here is the state of Israel.
How did he know?
How do you expect me to answer that?
I don't know, but nobody said that. Rashi didn't say it. Tosfos didn't say that. The Rambam didn't say it. The Arizal didn't say it. We're not Yidden before Matan Torah. We have thousands of years of we had Melachim and Nevi'im, and we had Rabbanu Kamoi and Rabbanu Tzavroi, and then we had Rishonim, we had Tanoim, Amoraim. Nobody said, I know the reason why Mashiach is not coming today.
So, but you see, here, I am sure that this is not the argument, because I don't think he has to prove his credentials.
But the main message that is Satmar preaches today, or teaches today, I don't want to say preach, teach it, because I don't want to be derogatory, I think,
I
Tzadikim and Kedoshim, is what they teach today is, it's sort of like the Echad of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. And I'm saying is, the Gemara Lamashal says in Yuma, I think it's on Daf Samaches or Samachtes, the Gemara says, Batla Yetzra Avodah Zara. The Gemara says, it used to be Avodah Zara was the passion. If you would get up today and start speaking to your kids about Avodah Zara, they'd be on their, you know, they'd be looking at their shoes. Today's Avodah Zara is the internet. Today's Avodah Zara
and
is the fact that
today's Avodah Zara is money.
Whatever my point is, isn't by Satma talking about the equivalent, in my eyes, Yitzra Avodah Zara Zionism, losing the opportunity to fight the battle of this generation, be it money, be it internet, be it pornography, be it drugs, be it lack of emunah, are they fighting yesterday's battles and losing the chance to inspire their children on the things that are much more relevant in today's life than debating what Herzl wanted to do?
Okay, but I'm trying to say, and please, is by debating issues that, and it's not what he wanted to do, it's the understanding what we're waiting for, who we are, is de facto fighting the battle of the internet. We're better, we being Klal Yisrael, are better. We're not street level people, and unfortunately society is street level, and every time there is this discussion, why aren't we just working members of society? That awakens the discussion that says there is no working society. Working members of society are the morality issues that are there. Therefore, that is the discussion of internet. That is the discussion of looking for things that we shouldn't be for things, with things. That is the discussion. That is the method or the road or what the sign on the outside door says to get you in to discuss this is really not the issue. The issue is it's the passion of keeping you on the path of Torah in total, in the form that it was meant to be. And therefore, I have to discuss internet, I have to discuss all the other things because it's part of that discussion. But I am teaching it in a method of Torah and morality. I am telling you to be proud of who you are. Proud of who you are only happens one way, by sincerely imparting a passion for what we believe in and we were brought up with. We're doing the exact thing you say we should do is exactly what we're doing.
Rabbi Brown, it's an honor that...
All this, though, doesn't answer your question in terms of protests, because there are two answers to when we go out protesting. And this might touch in current things. There never should be a protest against the Yochid, never. There never should be a protest against internal people that are shematory mitzvahs and we have differences of how we paskin or how we come to a certain conclusion. You never protest against that either. you protest against a protocol, Aleph, or you protest where the protest could be Mavatla Gzeira. Where public pressure could be Mavatla Gzeira, you protest. That's the short of the only times you go out to protest. When you are protesting a protocol, and to explain, and really the protest is Klapa Shemaya. Rebbeinu Shlomo, I am not part of the movement that says that Yiddishkeit is for sale. I'm not part of the movement that says that Yiddishkeit is to be compromised in this. And that's one form of protest. And the second form of protest is when pressure could help to avoid a gezeira, that would be another area of protest. After all other avenues were expanded.
Rabbi Brown, Rabbi Yitzchak Brown, it's been a pleasure and honor to have you on with us. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you as well, and the feeling is mutual.
Okay.